from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Chris Hendricks.
And for those of you that have been excited by the announcement of a Bible Stories that has come out, sort of reigniting that, because that's part that is part of the whole Save TGA campaign, I'm like, well, we're going to write the book, so I'm going to fucking kickstart this Bible Stories shit back up.
Woo-hoo! That's what's happening. I'm so pumped. I love the Bible Stories.
And today we're actually going to cover the story of Joshua. We're going to pick up right where we left off with Moses. And, in the notes, here's what's going to be cool. If you go to the site and you don't remember what the Moses one was like, I'll give out the numbers in the notes so that you get to know exactly which shows you have to go and download.
Perfect.
Now, when we last left our heroes, if you will, I don't know if we want to call them that, but when we last left the
protagonists,
I suppose, the roving bands of wanderers looking for a home to steal, because that's the nice way to put it. Their leader Moses had died. Now, this was an important thing for them because, according to their own little ever-changing covenant with God, no one that was alive during Moses' time could be alive if they wanted to see the promised land. And with that done, the new leader, the new person on the seat, is chosen by God. Now, how that's done is not very specific. It's just like, and then God chose Joshua. And you might remember Joshua. He was one of the spies that went around looking for places that they could take shit, but, come back with the news that it doesn't look too good. Everybody out there looks really strong, and we have done comparatively poorly. And for the most part, at least in the last part of the story, our own God kept on killing a whole bunch of us for arbitrary reasons. Like, for instance, for demanding fish or meat, or just really generally complaining that this whole 40 years shit was getting a little long, so a whole bunch of them just get burned by a fire from the sky. Or you don't recall any of this. See, this is why you have to go back and listen to some of the old episodes. I'm not going to cover those parts because that's the Moses trilogy that you need to go listen to. Now we're in a new part, just as fascinating, but if not more murderous.
Yay!
Because now we're doing the Book of Joshua is essentially, if you want to understand it before we talk about the story itself, it is a romanticized version of how they how they settled. And I'm using quotation marks here because, as we'll see, settlement is a bloody affair involving the massacre of thousands. Now, of course, I guess the way that most people have probably heard it is with the apologetics, at least, is saying, like, well, all of this is okay, by the way. All of this genocide that we're just about to cover is okay because God commanded it. And, before we start the story, I want you to remember that these people, like, even imagining this story is true, which it obviously is not, and we'll cover a couple of reasons why it isn't, but just imagine it from the perspective that it is true, but that these are crazy cultists that had a magical little voice in their head saying, slaughter all these people. Because I want you to know this, every time we cover one kingdom getting raised and everybody getting killed, like every living thing. Because this is going to be a pretty repetitive show, because that happens a lot. Okay, so now that God has commanded that Joshua is the new leader, he basically informs everybody else, these elders of all these tribes, be like, all right, I'm the new guy in town, and God has told me exactly how we're going to get this promised land. So that is going to be through ritualistic murder, okay? And by ritualistic, I mean that there are very, very specific commandments to keep in mind when trying to get this land. God is very specific. He's like, kill everything. everything. I want nothing left alive. No human being. And at least in the beginning part, not even any cattle. Like, you can't keep anything because I will be greatly displeased. But if you do these things for me, I'm going to give you some superpower shit. And nice. You're going to be able to just raise everyone. And it's going to be effortless. You are going to be the instruments of my terror. And then once this is all done, you will inherit this land of milk and honey.
Ooh.
Now, before we go a little bit further, I just want to comment on the whole milk and honey thing, because the Bible is an old book, and in a lot of ways we don't understand that a lot of what was contemporary then is not now. So I think to some degree it holds some mysticism to us. You know what I mean? Like, hey, milk and honey, what a magical sounding land where you have fountains of milk and, I guess, big jars of honey and Winnie the Pooh stealing all your shit. But apparently back then, I guess the closest analog that we could find is a land of Pepsi and Doritos.
Well, I think you have to consider it in that in ancient times, the idea of something sweet was actually quite rare. Sweetness was rare. Apples were like a sweet apple, because most apples don't come true from seed.
Bitter.
Yeah, they're bitter. So apples were seen as you know, a sweet apple was something extremely special. An apple tree that produced, you know, really nice apples was precious. It was like gold. It was currency. And so was honey and all these things, because something sweet was rare. And milk was special because it contained fat. And that was also something that was really rare, like a creamy, fatty thing that was something
just
we needed.
Just drinking is delicious.
Absolutely. So I think when you hear a land of milk and honey, you should think abundance of the rare and precious elements of life kind of thing.
Right. The land of Pepsi and Doritos.
But those aren't rare. Pepsi is like a cheap... Like, that's the problem with modern culture, is that for us, sweetness has become cheap.
Yeah, only here, though. I swear, if I bring some Pepsi and some Doritos to some refugees in a desert, that's a pretty sweet-ass land. And you know what? We do live in a world where milk and honey are plenty, like, very available. We ourselves, at least briefly, until we just powered through that honey.
Not realizing,
like, oh my god, we consume so much honey.
We consumed, if you have an idea of what $5 of honey is, it's a decent amount of honey. I think we went through it in 4 days. And we just put it in tea. And
just a ridiculous
To be honest, I had one spoon of just honey.
So, yes. So this magical land where all of these now readily available produce would be available to the very thirsty and sugar-hungry Jews. So before they leave, they have a nice little powwow reiteration of all the laws, because Joshua's got to state this very clearly now. It's like, there's 613 laws of Moses. You must obey every single one of them, even if some of them might conflict or contradict each other or be confusing. Not up to you. You just have to obey them all, and then we will have this super weapon, which is the Ark of the Covenant, which is the thing from Indiana Jones and everybody that kills everybody.
Dun, 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 dun.
Da, 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 that's right. Okay, so he basically gathers all the men, leave the women, basically on the east side of the Jordan River, and he's like, okay, well, we're going to go to Jericho, but first, he sends two spies to say, like, all right, you got to go check out this place, see what it's like, all right, are they too strong again? You know, they need some surveyors, so these two spies set out, and go to Jericho, and they sleep over at a prostitute's house, presumably getting the group discount. And the next day, because, you know, these city-states are very small, and I guess that, hey, the Rahab, the local prostitute, took in two strange men from this tribe that's been going around killing a whole bunch of people. So all of a sudden, the king of Jericho's told this, and he sends out soldiers who go knocking at her door. And, you know, she basically gives the cops the slip. She hides the two spies on her roof under a pile of flaxseed, and she tells the soldiers, they went, you know, the east or whatever. They went that away. Gives them some cockamamie story, so they leave. And she goes back and she tells the spies, being like, oh, well, everybody's afraid of you. And I know that you're probably going to conquer us. So because I saved your asses, can you not murder me and my family? So they're like, all right, that sounds fair. What you do is you hang a red rope from your window, and anyone that's in the house will not be killed, but if they step out or whatever, they's gonna get slaughtered.
Nice.
Because everything that moves, I don't care if it's a fucking squirrel, I'm gonna smash it with my hammer, or I'm gonna cut it with my sword, or pierce it with my spear. That's what's gonna happen. We's killing everything. So she agrees, and they slip out of her window, because I guess she's right on the wall of Jericho, and they just climb down. And Jericho's got, like, these massive, massive walls. That's the big deal about Jericho. What makes it sort of, like, seem like, how are we supposed to conquer this place? Which is exactly what Joshua wonders to himself. Be like, well, that's all well and good that they're scared of us, but how the fuck are we going to win? So God's like, don't worry about it. You're going to do something that sounds really stupid. All right, here's what you're going to do. Once a day, you're going to circle the town of Jericho with all your soldiers with the ark and blowing your horns. You're going to circle once. Then you're going to go back to your camp. You're going to do this six times, all right? This for 6 days. And now on the seventh day,
So that everybody at Jericho is fully prepared.
Scared shitless. You know, like just frighten the crap out of them. And on the seventh day, you are to do this seven times, and then some magical shit's going to happen. Okay, so, you know, who's one to argue with the mysterious force that often kills you? You don't really argue with it. So they set off, and because they don't really want to build a bridge, they bring the Ark of the Covenant to the river, and then it does the same fucking trick that happened with Moses, the parting of the Red Sea. Well, part of the Red Sea, part two, River Jordan.
Nice.
Yeah, so I guess it's a really useful thing to have. I think we should just find it, you know, because it makes surveying the sea floor just so much more convenient.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That would be awesome. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of, like, a video game, like an MMO. It's like, oh, I got the Ark of the Covenant. Awesome. I have the special power to cross rivers now. Cool.
Actually, it reminds me much more of Zelda.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's kind of like, now I can go to the underwater temple.
Ah, totally. Hey.
Use the Ark of the Covenant to find the lost city of Atlantis. Because it's all fantasy. Okay, so they cross the river, and they arrive at Jericho, and sure enough, they do their little spinny-majiggy merry-go-round shit. And on the seventh day, when they do that on the seventh time, boom, the walls of the city fall. I guess one side of it just blammo, and they just rush in, and they fuck kill everything. But, true to their word, wow, what a mark of honor here. They do not kill the prostitute and whatever amount of people she could probably fit in her house. Loved ones or friends or who knows what. Hey, guys, got some news for you. Anybody want to come to my house? Right? It'll only be $1,000.
Nice.
Well, I don't know if she charged them. Enterprising. That's what I would do. You're like, well, yeah. Now, the whole place is razed, and Joshua basically places a curse on Jericho, and saying, this shitty city shall never be rebuilt. I curse thee, which is a very popular thing to do when you decide to destroy a city, because cities have a tendency of being rebuilt. You know? Mm. Its foundations are there, which is exactly what happened. Jericho still exists today, although it's not called Jericho. I don't quite know what the name is, because it's not in my notes. But it has roughly the same population that it had when Jericho was first founded 11,000 years ago.
Whoa.
Yeah, it makes all of this kind of little history stuff seem pretty recent, honestly, when it's just, you know, it's humble beginnings during the ninth millennium before the Common Era, where it's just hunter-gatherers. And, you know, they achieved a size of about 1,000 back then. So this place has been, you know, through some shit. How much of it, we can't possibly know. And some of it, like, even when describing the story of Jericho, there's lots of archaeological evidence to suggest that by the time the Jews would have been there, if there was such a thing as their own exodus, that it would have been abandoned anyways.
Mm.
So, yeah, sure, the walls sure fell. Yeah, the walls fell.
Because they were crappy.
Because they were already fallen. That was easy. We circled it around the rubble of the place. But, hey, like we said before, when you try to fantasize about the history of something, how did you get settled here? And you decide, well, let me tell ye a tale of how we defeated Jericho using arc magic.
Woo!
Woo! Okay, so Jericho being destroyed and everything in it being obliterated, which I'm sure is quite a great deal of blood. they go back, they keep nothing, or at least they think they keep nothing. But unbeknownst to them, one of theirs, Akan, has kept something, which is going to be of great importance, because next they decide, well, Jericho did so well, we're going to attack the nearby town of Ai. And they send some spies, and the spies come back and they're like, well, you know, it's a pretty small town, there's not a lot of dudes, so we could send about 3,000, not tire out everybody, probably not have all of their supplies, because by now the mana distribution from heaven is over. Like, that's done. There's no more welfare from the sky. So now you don't get to eat sky bread anymore. You've got to liberate it from nearby crops. Well, how else are they going to eat? They don't have an economy, all right? Obviously, they're like, we've got to take shit, and that's what we're going to do. So Joshua sends about 3,000 guys, but they get their fucking asses kicked. And, you know, a bunch of them are slaughtered on the way back. It's a mess. And Joshua has a bit of a kind of diva moment breakdown, like, what the fuck, God, you said you were with us, and are we going to lose now, and blah, blah. You know, it's kind of like, this is a typical Jewish thing, actually, to really complain, be angry at God. You're going to see this so much in next week's Bible stories where I do Judges. Oh, my God, it's nothing but that complaining and then just getting smitten for complaining. But it is apparently a Jewish thing, so that's what they're into. Whining and
is it
complaining
smitten
about
or
God.
Is it smited?
Ooh.
Smote.
Smoted.
Smoted. I think smitten I is like, I'm
you're
smitten.
Right, you're right. I used that wrong. Smotened.
Smoted.
Or whatever.
Smotified.
The act of being smote.
Smoted. Smotidilated.
So God reveals to Joshua the fact that, well, the reason that you lost was because I was not with you. Someone broke my rules. My very, very specific and only I understand these motherfucking rules. All right? So he says, convene everybody and I'm going to point this guy out in front of all. Now, the method of this is not discussed, but God, the next day, singles out Akan. Now, I don't know how that's done. I presume it's by the casting of lots, which happens all the fucking time. You know what casting of lots is? All right. It's basically ancient little magic gree-gree shit where you have like a little cup full of like, you know, sticks or whatever, and you're just shaking them around to try to divine what the fuck is happening around you. Yeah. Some freaky magic that people tell you that you're not supposed to do because that's evil and sinful. Yeah, that magic. Yeah, so they're casting out lots, maybe.
So they're
I don't
doing
know
divination.
They're doing divination. That's probably the way that he's discovered, or who knows what. Maybe I have to imagine it would be a kind of like a neat parlor trick where he's doing a John Edwards thing. All right, I'm getting that the bad guy's name who did this starts with an A. And Akan's like, me, I'm Akan! All right, that was easy. Good thing your name started with A, buddy. So yeah, Akan comes, like, you know, comes forward, confesses what he's done, and to reward him for his honesty, his family and his goods are taken to a nearby field and they're all stoned to death by everyone else. So, yeah, the whole family gets punished for that one, including all his livestock.
What?
They cannot suffer this sin. It transfers, apparently, to when you touch anything, maybe, or possibly have had sex with, which would explain all the barn animals.
That's more like making an example of you. It's like, I'm not just going to kill you. I'm going to kill all your family and all your animals.
It's a lot about setting some examples here.
Terrifying.
Yeah, and you know, so much of what The first campaign, Jericho, them busting their cherries successfully, sets a really pretty much the precedence of what's about to happen with all of these other kingdoms and places that are about to be destroyed. But the way in which they're done so, I'll try to describe them artfully. because it's a massacre fest. So much blood. Like, you wouldn't even make this movie. It's not a movie. It's a snuff film. You know, like, I couldn't even imagine, like, there's no part where there seems a conflict except for at least this brief intermission, if you will, from the massacre fest to punish to death a man for keeping a nice robe he found and a few pieces of silver and gold. Well, that certainly deserved it, everyone that he knows.
So that's what he's getting punished for. It's not about leaving the prostitute to live.
Well, no, she had, they had made a deal, a pact, you know. And besides...
Yeah, but didn't God say kill everyone, and they didn't kill everyone, and isn't that against what he said?
Well, I guess there is that technicality that they had not considered, but, hey, what can you do?
So he got in trouble for keeping a couple things. That's what it was for. It wasn't for... Because I had assumed all along that he... I'm like, oh, he let that bitch live. He's going to get in trouble.
No, it's not... Akan was not one of the spies. He was just a dude who kept a robe and some gold that he had buried underneath his tent. And so him and his loved ones are stoned to death for doing so. And now with God back on their side, and right when he's killed, by the way, they pile a bunch of stones literally on the burnt corpse of him and his loved ones. And they build an altar there to God. Be like, ta-da! Altar for you.
Ooh.
Big giant stones. Big giant stones.
Ugh, on their corpses?
On their burnt
corpses.
That's
gotta be smelly. Ugh.
I'm assuming the rocks were probably big enough that it crushed them into a paste, making them pretty much like pancakes. Yuck.
Bible's gross.
This is a pleasant book. Okay, so they go back, and now that they have the super massacre man on their side, they go back to Ai, and now God gives them a little bit of a tactic, because I guess that some strategy would be good, too. Just having the Ark there isn't good enough. You need to have some tactics. And now his tactic is like, well, do the same as before, and when you retreat, set up an ambush. So they do this, and it's extremely successful. And most of the men are killed, although some of them run back to the town, but they're chased down and they're massacred. And with all the men dead, everyone is also killed. There's no one left alive. So they say roughly, I mean, this is the one of the few times where they try to mention some numbers. Most of the time they don't. But in this case, they say 12,000 men, women, and children dead. So it's like, eyes destroyed. Blam! And we'll roughly assume that Jericho's like twice the size of that. So we'll give them the 12,000 there, and we'll give them a 24,000. So we'll say you've got 36,000 deaths on your hands so far. Plus, you know, a few miscellaneous people right there.
Ooh.
So that's Ai. Ai is now destroyed. Here's what's interesting about Ai in history, by the way. Again, a good example of no real evidence that this town was even around by the time that they would have arrived in the land of Canaan. So, yeah. Another example of an abandoned town where you're like, we came here, we conquered, we sure did. Look, we left nothing alive. Nothing's left standing even. All the bricks are torn down. Wow, we're amazing. Yeah, you sure are. I should do that. I should step into ghost towns and then just be like, I wiped everybody out.
It was me. I'm a badass.
I'm fucking amazing. I'm the new Joshua. You should follow me and do all the creepy things that are told to me when I'm alone. Okay, so now that Jericho has been sacked and destroyed, and I has been sacked and destroyed, and what have you, there's a nearby kingdom of Gibeon who hears about this, and they are scared. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to die, so they figure we're going to trick them into a peace treaty. So what they do is they take their ambassadors and they give them old sheepskins and old wineskins and moldy bread, and they send them off. So when they get to Joshua and all the elders to negotiate peace, they're like, we are from a faraway land.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, proof is we baked this bread fresh when we left, and look, it's moldy, and look at our wineskins, and look at our clothing. Maybe they oversell it. I would say they maybe oversold it a little bit. But the ruse apparently works, and Joshua does not consult the Lord, which sounds like one of those, the truth machine now, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't consult the truth machine. And unfortunately, he doesn't know that they are, in fact, one of the neighboring places of this new land that they've said that their gods have told them that they should have.
Ah.
So when they find this out, a couple days later, they're very pissed. They sent some, you know, a couple of representatives, i.e. people with swords and spears and things, to their towns. And they're like, why have you deceived us? And so they basically, the compromise is reached where they offer themselves up as slaves. Because that sounds like a believable thing that somebody would do, isn't it? They're like, we will be your servants now. We will be your servants. You can't kill us. We have a peace treaty. So they honor it and make them slaves. So
aww.
What an honorable bunch of people, don't you think?
That's awful. Come on, Bible. What's that about?
Well, you know, it's just that's how things are. That's how things are.
What lesson are we supposed to learn from this?
That is a good question.
If somebody is stronger than you and has been manipulating and lying to you, you should become their slave, and that's cool.
Well, first you got to trick them into accepting peace and then essentially condemn your ancestors to slavery. Although I suppose that it's better than being wiped out.
Yeah.
It sounds like one of those horrible pragmatic things
what about
you
that
do
whole thing
in a
where
disastrous bronze.
Yeah, but what about that whole thing where it's like, it's supposed to be emotionally true. It's supposed to be a metaphor for how we should live our life. What metaphor is in that? I'm supposed to be a slave to anyone bigger and stronger than me?
Well, you do have to understand that in order for anyone to buy that cockamamie bullshit, you kind of have to not read the thing.
That would help.
It's like everybody who reads this is highly offended. You should be. If my show is offensive to you, let it be known that it is only because the content is offensive.
It totally reminds me of the Julia Sweeney thing where she was like, when I studied the Bible, I kept driving around in my car. I'd see people wandering into church with their Bibles, and I just wanted to yell out my car, have you read that book? I felt like everybody had the secret to this crazy cult, and everybody knew what was going on, and everybody was just going along with it. And it's like, yeah, I know.
You have not read this book. Yeah. You have not read this book. Okay, so the king of Jerusalem, called Adonai Zedek, hears that that Gibeon has essentially surrendered itself or made a peace treaty, and he's unhappy. So he summons up a couple more kings to battle to kill the Gibeons. Or mm-hmm. Gibeonites, I'm not sure how we say it. Anyways.
The Gibbers.
Kill the old Gibbers.
The old Gibbers.
The old Gibbers. And now the Gibeonites or the old Gibbers go over to the Jews and they say, well, you kind of have to honor a peace treaty here, so come and defend us. Otherwise, we're just going to get killed. And hey, you know, you need a slave class anyways, right? Who's going to do all your wood chopping and building of these spears that you're using to jab people with?
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody's got to do all that hard work. So they go, and now it's a fairly sizable army. Enough that they say that it's like the grains of sand in a beach. So we'll assume it's an army of a few thousand people.
Hmm.
And now Josh was a little bit nervous. Who can blame him? But God tells him, he's like, don't worry. As soon as you attack, I'm going to throw them in a motherfucking panic, and you're just going to slaughter them. So they do this, and sure enough, they kind of go into a panic, and God's throwing some brimstones at him too. Like, he's taking part in the fight now. And but there's so much killing to be done that Joshua realizes he's not going to have the time to do it one day. So he prays to God to make the sun stand still so that he can chase down everybody and make sure that he slaughters every single one of them. And God answers this prayer. And so big a deal is this that even in the very book itself, Book of Joshua, they just take it like a kind of author's note here. This is a motherfucking big deal. Never has God ever done anything this awesome ever before or ever again as stop the sun. So even they recognize me like, yep. Yeah, I know it sounds pretty fucking incredible. You should be incredulous to this.
So how long did they stop the sun? Are we talking like longest day of the year stopping the sun? Or
3 days.
It's a long time.
It's a long time.
Do you think maybe they were just like up way north where...
No.
Huh.
No. I think that it's just like we described before, when you're going to romanticize something, you could say, well, let's begin with probably a poetic rendition of an older story where one would say that the days seem endless. And then that probably gets mistranslated to the day was endless. And then someone decides to take some poetic license to that shit. Let's say the movie Amadeus that we watched, and basically decide the sun stood still for 3 days.
Speaking of which, watch the movie Amadeus.
We talk about it enough that you should probably go watch it.
Watch it. Holy smokes. I had not seen it at all, and in the same day I watched it twice, and I watched the director's cut, which is 3 hours long. I watched 6 hours of Amadeus within a 24-hour time span, because it was so...
No, that's not true. You actually watched...
No, I watched
you
it.
You watched more, because you watched the documentary, which
oh,
was an
right.
hour and a half.
Right, and then I watched the making of. Really like this movie a lot.
But I think I'm just using it to illustrate this idea that the way that we like to tell stories, just in general human nature, is we kind of take semi-facts that get translated wrong, that get romanticized, and the process is repeated ad nauseum.
Yeah, that makes
fucking
sense.
Nauseam. And I mean, in the stories of Noah, for instance, I think I talked about this, how, you know, it's based on a much older story, predating, any Jews by many thousands of years itself, such an ancient legend that was their ancient legends, you know, that our ancient legends are legends of other ancient legends. So are you going to believe in legends? I cannot stress how silly that is. But now let's get back to our legend, where all of the kings who have now lost, because they've pretty much they've been smoted, and they decide to find refuge in a cave nearby. Joshua hears of this, and so he sends some of his spies to seal up the cave while everybody else is busy just annihilating the rest of the Amorites, which is who this army is composed of. So, by the time everybody's slaughtered, they open up the cave again, and they bring out all five kings, and he's like, to the five soldiers, he's like, step on their necks. It's like, don't cool. you... Yeah, it's like, well, not, you know, step on it really hard, and then he grabs his sword, and he chops off all their heads. And then he takes the bodies, and he hangs them up in some trees nearby, just as an example. And they just raise everything nearby, just burn it right down to the ground, destroy it, destroy the towns of these kings, wipe everybody out.
Oh, my goodness. This book is sad.
Yeah. Okay, so now to the section that I like to call, and here we go again and again and again, because we've only really dealt with three.
I don't know if I can handle this
you'll
story.
Have to, you're going to have to handle it.
Okay,
it's coming
on.
At you.
Hold on. I need
Take
more beer.
Sip.
I need a beer.
There you go.
All right.
Drink it down, because here's more violence.
Genocide. I can now
So now the nearby town
the story
of Makeda is also suffers the same fate as every single other city, along with Libna, Lachish, and when they attack Lachish, and after they finish killing everybody, there's another king that appears, because he's heard of the news, and sort of was like, I shall bring my army and try to defeat them. So the king of Horam shows up for the fight, but then he's killed. So, And then, you know, with sharing all the fate of, like, the we're going to step on your neck, cut your head, and hang you in a tree thing. There's so much of that.
It's awful.
Then, after that's done, they go on to Eglon, Hebron, and Debir, and then they do that again. Although, they do take note to mention that many of the nearby towns, who they probably till then ignored, get wiped out too. So then, now that they've done this, they retreat to their camp at Gilgal, which is where they were situated near the River Jordan, and just to chill out, basically to kind of take a break from all the murdering.
Hold on, I got a question. So, So are we to believe that they are killing so many people just so that they can have the space? They need more space, or do they need the wealth? Or
well, they do take all the gold for the Lord's treasury, which is a blanket term for whatever you probably want to use it for. But yeah, they do take money. Generally speaking, they kill most of the people, and in I don't know what percentage, because it's difficult, because sometimes they kill everything, sometimes they take the cattle, and sometimes the name of just the town is mentioned, be like, and then they attack this place. So it's difficult for me to tell you whether or not they just took everything.
But what's motivating this?
Clearly they've killed everyone.
It's all just for God.
Well, essentially the plan is to ethnically cleanse the area.
Ah, okay. I see.
Right.
So no more other cultures.
Right. They are your enemies.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
I get it.
You're not to really...
That's fucked up.
Yeah. And... Yeah, so it's a campaign of genocide. You're not to live with them. You're not to intermarry with them. It's very, very specific about that. Moses talked about it, and Joshua will talk about it near the end of this story. He'll go on to
say. Okay, so I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's fine.
I was just trying to figure out what the motivation is here. Like, was this just...
What is this? That a play? Like, their motivation is God told them to do it, and that's good enough.
Okay.
That's how crazy they are.
Creepy.
Yeah, it is really creepy.
Okay.
When you think about it, because that's how people justify it in their mind. God decided that this was okay, sweetheart. And so they just did it. And if you listen to any, an apologist, a Christian apologetic, will defend it as such. He's like, it was right because God commanded it and God is good. So anything that God demands is good.
Including ethnic cleansing.
Including ethnic cleansing.
Well, that's fucked up, guys. I don't like this story. I'm not cool with this at all.
Yeah, you're not cool with it? Okay,
mm-mm.
So now the king, the other kings, the king of Hazor, hears about all of this massacre, and so they get scared shitless, and he basically calls together a huge, massive army, the biggest army that they're going to, have faced. And
the boss level.
This is this is like probably, I would say, their biggest pushback that they possibly can. You've got some... You've got the Amorites, what's left of them. You've got the Hittites. You've got the Perizzites. You've got the Jebusites.
Jebus.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jebus was actually the name of Jerusalem before it was Jerusalem, and it was inhabited by Jebusites.
Oh. Nice.
So that's who those are. They're pre-Jerusalem living people.
I like.
That are about to be massacred.
Jebusite.
Oh, yeah, and the Hivites are also there. So the whole party.
Jebusites feels like a special power you have. Like, I've got Jebusite. It's like a magical power where you can see the Lord in everyone. Jebusite.
Yeah.
I like it.
It sounds like a rock.
Sounds
like a precious rock.
Jebusite. Jebusite and turquoise. My ring's made of Jebusite and turquoise. It's beautiful.
It's blood red.
Yeah,
it's blood red. So, Joshua, again, is a little bit weary of this. God says, be cool, I'm on your side, no problemo. Sure enough, everybody's thrown in a panic, and they slaughter everyone, and then they cripple all the horses.
Oh, the horses?
And then they destroy all of the
chariots. All of the women listening to this podcast just were like, what, horses?
Yeah. To leave them sort of like writhing around, probably making noise and shit like that.
No.
Like they cut their tendons off.
No, not the horses.
So they probably can't walk and shit like that, and they starve to death kind of thing. So they decide to make probably a field of screaming horses as they slowly die. Why is that sadder
thing.
Than like everyone getting massacred in all these cities?
I don't know, because they chose to. I don't know. I just the horses.
Ponies are nicer.
You know what's funny?
People.
You know what's really funny is that the thing that got the most to me about the whole global warming or inconvenient truth thing. It was that cartoon they did of a polar bear on the ice cap.
You're
I was
such
like,
a suck.
The polar bear is
such a
he's
suck.
Gonna starve to death. That's the saddest thing ever. Starve? I don't know. In my
opinion, starve to death. Probably drown. Actually, probably drown.
My heart hurts so.
That's
bad.
Why it's actually really hard to find bones of polar bears because they just fall to the bottom of the sea. Yeah. Hey, you live on a giant floating pile of ice, though. That is one of the hazards.
Makes my heart hurt
so
bad.
Yeah, it would make your heart hurt if it ripped your face off and everyone you cared about.
Whatever. In my mind, polar bears are adorable. And horses need protection from getting their tendons cut and writhing on the ground and starving to death. Oh, this story is horrible. I hate it. No, I'm not doing any more Bible stories, man. I can't handle it.
No, you know what? You'll like Judges. Trust me. Because everybody gets their comeuppance. But there is a lot of killing, though. It is hilarious. You're going to love it. And And it's probably the only book where you'll actually have a strong female character.
Oh.
But by strong, I mean like murderers.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt. You keep going. So they kill everybody.
They kill everybody. They destroy their chariots. And then they just sort of like, they go back to these towns again. And, you know, it's the same story. Slaughter, massacre. And although not every single city is burnt, their goods are taken. The cattle is gone. But, you know, who's going to miss it? Everyone's been slaughtered. So now that they've pretty much finished their whole slaughter, there is one group of people that they have yet to eliminate. And these are called the Anakim. Like Anakim Skywalker, I guess. But with an M. The Anakim. And the Anakim are actually the ancestors of the Nephilim. Now, these might sound familiar. They were the race of giants that I mentioned in Genesis that were angels that had fucked really hot girls.
Nice.
And they were sort of like, they were really tall people. So they're the giants. So my guess, if they are based in fact on anyone historic, I would say that probably it's the Jews that are tiny and everybody else is probably regular height. You know, eating space bread probably makes one a little bit tiny. But yes, these giants are hunted down and obliterated. So if you thought, you know, if you're one of those literalists, one of those hilarious literalists that are like, well, the flood killed everyone, then why were there still ancestors of the Nephilim?
Ah.
Right? And apparently more of those ancestors pop up when King David slaughters Goliath, who's supposed to be also one of these ancestors.
Continuity error.
Continuity error. Yeah, not everybody died, did they? Whoops.
Bad storytelling.
How do you handle that, Mr. Literalist? Jeez, it's gotta be hard. But I'm sure you find a way. You always find a way.
Well, when you're talking about trying to justify bullshit, you just tack more bullshit on the end of it. It's no problem.
Yeah, I suppose so. So now we have kind of like a good idea of all of these campaigns that have basically happened. And a significant portion of the groups around are now dead, massacred, slaughtered, just eviscerated.
Eesh.
So now that they're finished this, they kind of settle down and it's time to divide up some of the land. Now, the thing is, they're not done, right? They're not really finished because there are lots of other neighboring tribes and peoples that many of these individuals are also to move down there. So they're kind of like, all right, this is a land divide, but some of you, your work is not complete. It's like, hey, you tribe of Dan, you're going to have to go kill a whole bunch of people nearby. And even in the book of Joshua, they mentioned, well, some are not really able to do that too well, so they kind of live with them. And
that's just cool.
And I guess that's just got to be cool. Because they were too strong and they couldn't be wiped out. So when that can't happen, they sort of like go back to sort of like a very pragmatic, so, well, we'll just live with them.
So genocide is preferable, but peace is an okay like runner-up prize.
Well, yes, because these people are to eventually become slaves.
Right, okay.
That is the plan. Although, as we will later see in the book of Judges, the Jews are throwing themselves into some slavery every now and again and get their asses kicked for not, you know, obeying all the rules and all the shit that they constantly have to do. But for now, things are pretty prosperous. A bunch of tribes get some good land, which, you know, where they've already done most of the hard work. But, you know, they cast out lots to decide who's going to win. So a few people got the draft picks earlier than others, and some people got the kind of shaft when it came to it, but hey, that's going to happen. Somebody's got to inherit the dry, shitty land. And the only one that don't inherit any of the land is the tribe of the Levites, because they're the priestly class. So they're the class that go around, if you walk into a town, you're like, hey, I'm a descendant of a Levite. They're like, ooh, everybody's got to treat you like you're a big fucking deal. Like, you are the shit.
That's a good thing to tell people, then. Is there a way you can prove you're a descendant of Levites? I just go around saying that shit over and over again.
Well, I suppose you would probably be asked a lot of questions back then. You know, everybody had to have a pretty prodigious memory of their own ancestry. So my advice to you would be to find a Levite, torture him to death to get what his family lineage is, and then make sure you memorize it and then murder him. And
nice.
Then call yourself a Levite.
That sounds like a good deal.
Well, according to the way that everything's been going so far, that doesn't sound like it's that immoral. If genocide is okay, why is killing one other man to take over his place when I don't have the opportunity to have upward advancement anyways? Jeez, I guess I'm just going to do that then. Okay. Now, by now, Joshua is pretty old. And before he dies, he convenes up all of the tribe elders. And he tries to remind them that they need to keep their covenant with God. This is really important. This is going to be the difference between victory and defeat. And he's like, okay, you've slaughtered everybody, but now we're all being divided up, going our respective ways, so now you got to be careful. Be cautious out there.
I'm not there to babysit you anymore.
Yeah. And you know, at one point, a few of the tribes, Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh, they build after one of the towns that they destroy, they build an altar. And everybody kind of like makes a big deal out of that because I think it's an altar to one of the other gods or something like that. So the bunch of tribes sort of get together and they're just about to go to civil war. Like now it's all of a sudden it's like they're turning on each other over something like this fucking altar shit. But there's some last minute diplomacy where the elders of these tribes say, no, we just built that as a reminder that we just killed everybody there. And it, you know, God is still the Lord, and we're still Yahwists.
It's all good.
Let's not have like a fight. So, peace is really this tenuous here. So he's an old man, and he just So now that this is done, he gathers up everybody, and he tells them, "You've got to follow the rules, all of Moses' commandments and shit like that, or God will abandon you."
And that would suck.
Yeah, and then he just recounts everything that God did for them. You know, sort of like a reminder of this is why you owe him. Be like, before you were slaves, but now he gave you the tools for genocide. And you tossed aside these individuals
that lived there
for much longer than you. And you enslaved some of them, and you did great. You did absolutely great, but you did this because you prayed to this violent and capricious and jealous man, God. And good things happened. Good things happened.
Wonderful.
And so then he dies at the age of 110 because we're done with the guys that live a long time. That's over. God got pissed with that anyways, and he sort of like decided. Now,
or we just got better record keepers.
Yeah, or that. Hey, we're trying to stay true to this story, right?
I'm sorry.
We're taking a literalist approach there.
Literalist.
We will. There in the book itself will be where we just school the history of it. But for the podcast itself, just the Bible stories element, we're just covering the stories because I think that's all you need. I don't need to disprove to you the archaeology of all this. You just need to hear the story and be like, I am
that
disgusted.
Shit sounds that sounds fucking crazy. Yeah, I think, you know, well, it's here's my overwhelming feeling from this particular story. Some of the stories I'm like, ooh, that's sexy. And some of the stories I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And this one I'm like, that's awful.
That's a slaughter fest.
Just awful. What the hell?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's
no.
It's a snuff film. That's what it is. Mm-mm. So we had to cover a snuff film. My deep apologies to everyone. Yeah, that was unpleasant. There will be some similar but much more hilariously intricate stories. You've got to understand that Joshua was a bit of a boring one. Like I said before, it is a kind of like their fantasy of how they got to live there. So their fantasy is a genocidal nightmare for the rest of us.
This person is fucked up. If my child has had these fantasies, I would send him to therapy and then to boarding school and pretend he didn't exist.
Well, here's what's interesting. I went to the Brick Testament website, and there's a kid's version of the Bible stories, which I feel that it's kind of disappointing. Where, you know, like some stuff is edited out and shit like that.
Aww.
That is disappointing.
Can't edit the word of God.
It's not just that. I know where it comes from. I'm like, he got a lot of complaints, the author of it. He got a lot of complaints from parents who had gotten this and be like, well, I gave it to my kid and it was really too mature. So he put like PG, there's like a G version, a PG or a PG-13 version. I'm like, look, it's all PG-13, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's just being generous. I mean, you're doing Legos fucking, you know. Let me tell you, it's rated X.
Yeah, how much did he take out? Did he take out all the fucking and the war and the... That's all of the things. What did he leave in?
I'm not sure.
I want to read this book. It's like, oh, it's 8 pages long. That's interesting.
The Bible has to be told in its entirety, in its reality. No fucking pussyfooting around that. It's all some disturbed shit. And I think that's what we just covered. Some really disturbed
shit. Yeah, I'm uncomfortable.
Genocidal shit.
I'm going to have a bath
now. Yeah, you should probably. There will be many more interesting stories that are slightly less genocidal in the next bonus show. But yes, that completes our renewal of the Bible stories and our covering of Joshua. So I hope that you guys like it. And what's cool is that this one is... It's a free one that I put up.
Oh, that's nice.
Just to remind everybody that in a couple of... This is, I'm hoping, in less than a week. But it kind of... There's a few legal things that we have to sort of like sort through and that kind of stuff. But in a week that we will launch the Bible Stories book campaign on Kickstarter. So this is to excite you motherfuckers about that. Being like, work on the book is going to be done. And some cool things that we're going to be adding to it as well. Like, for instance... We're also working on building the Good Atheist Essentials, so picking the best shows. We're going to make a CD of that and, record a whole bunch of other bonus content stuff, like, you know, behind the scenes, that, you know, just stuff that I think the fans would be interested in. That will be part one of the packages that you'll be able to purchase for the pre-order will be this CD. And the cool thing is that, this one will be mailed out sort of midway between the completed date, which will be 2013, July 2013, which is when I want the book to come out.
So that means if you sign up for the Kickstarter stuff, you won't have to wait a whole year to get your awesomeness stuff. You'll get some of it.
Yeah, you'll get
pretty quickly.
You'll get some of it, like, sort of. We're going to be distributing content on a fairly regular flow, and really, just this is not just about the book. It's also being able to create other products and shit like that. It's the financing that we need to just make all of this shit happen.
It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be awesome. And, we're having so many other shows. I just recorded a podcast. It's going to be next week. Another interview with Peter Boghossian that you guys are just going to fucking flip out.
That was good. It was really good.
And then after that, we're going to have an interview with Austin Klein and another Bible story. So you guys have nothing but awesome shows coming at you. Like, seriously, it's going to be a month of great shows. And just to make sure that I kick this thing off to the right start and convince everybody that they have to get the Bible Stories book, that it's going to be awesome and scary at the same time, at least if the fucking Book of Joshua is any indication, right?
Well, you've been getting ready to write this book for, 4 years now? So
It's about time. And you know what? The great thing, too, about re-getting into the commitment of the shows is it just goes to show that as soon as if I put the commitment there, I do it. And I'm sure that everybody else who's got that in mind is going to be like, yeah, he's going to commit to that, and it's going to be awesome. And doing the Bible stories, which we're going to be doing much more regularly as I write the book, you know, I've got to first read the story itself, the raw story. So when I read the raw story, I'd like, you know, I'm making the shows out of those. So, you're hearing a lot of the very first raw stuff that's coming out. So that's what the Bible stories is. And if you want to hear that, then you'll have to be a bonus member. Sort of either regular or hardcores, although the hardcores, you guys helped me quite a bit.
That is very nice.
I've had some people have asked me to give them even more, like rather than just $5, they wanted to, I guess the best word is tithe a little bit more. So if that's one of you, then message me, because I don't want to clutter up the website with just a shitload of offers. But if that's something that you think, yeah, I'd like to give $10 a month or $20 is what one person was offering. Message me and I can create a private feed for you. So if it's not on the site, you can still ask me for it. And that kind of stuff is definitely appreciated. It helps us to keep doing what we're doing, guys. My whole plan, and this is what I want everyone to understand why I want to write Bible stories, is that the Bible is the most effective way to make more atheists. But it needs to be readable, it needs to be sort of relatable, and it needs to be interpreted in a way that is not trying to just shy away from its reality.
And funny.
And hopefully a little bit funny.
It is pretty funny.
That's the whole plan with Bible stories, and that's what we want you guys to support. So yeah.
That way everybody can read the Bible and without having to go through the torture that Jake is going through right now.
Right, you get the Cole's notes that are more fun. And I mean, like, just reading the depressing things about this is just awful. And plus, there with each Bible stories, there's a section that's going to be the story just like I've described it, but, you know, with a couple more jokes in. And then after that, the history, what really happened. So you can just pretty much nail it. It's done, right? You'll have read the Bible stories book, and you just be like, well, the Old Testament, that's done.
You'll know as much as any priest.
Probably more by then, because a lot of them are just pretty much told some giant loads of crap. It's not every fucking pastor that goes to 4 years of seminary. Many of them are just sort of dudes that started their own churches. You can school these people very easily. The rest of them, you'll at least be as knowledgeable as them. If in a couple areas, probably more knowledgeable because of the much more recent archaeological evidence. And I'm not looking at it from the perspective of the Bible is true. So much of our fucking Western history has been predefined that way. And when you look really hard, you'll find what you're looking for. It's like, that's not a good sign. You know, if you want to be true to history, you have to take it from a perspective. We need to understand what's going on here. When there's a much more realistic account that Jews didn't conquer any land, they were just part of the Canaanites that had lived there that essentially believed in a new religion. Like, just this whole conquest thing, probably just a fucking lie.
Bullshit. We're calling you on your shit.
Calling you on your shit, you motherfuckers. Okay, well, with that, I'd like to thank everybody who's a contributing member. Keep on doing it, and get ready for the Bible Stories book Kickstarter account. Keep your eye out for announcements. They will be coming soon. My name is Jacob Forjan.
And I'm Krista Hendricks.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.
Bye!
Come on, Jake. This is a tough one. I haven't done it in a while.
Boom, 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 ba-da-loom, boom. Boom, 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 boom. Ba-da-loom, boom.
Zip it. Shut your fucking mouth. Shut your filthy mouth. Try to concentrate. Didn't work. Shut up. That one's done.
Under pressure.